I think the members of the court will recall that in this matter, neither side requested oral argument. So I suspect that that probably means that one or more of the panel members do
all
have
of
some,
us.
or all have some questions of particular importance to them. And so I can speak a little bit about the case, or I can try to start fielding your questions right from the beginning, whatever the court prefers.
Well, I'll start with my confusion, if that helps you at all, Mr. Tummels, as to where, in reading Dr. Bay's report, I know that we can have more than one report to get a causal relationship. I think we all agree on that. And we definitely have Dr.
Wilkinson.
Is it Wilkinson's? Yes.
Yep.
That lines up how the doctor was causing Mrs. Solis's injuries. The issue that I have in reading page 48 of Dr. Bay's report is, where is the causal connection? I mean, that's what it all comes down of the credentialing issue you're making of Dr. Martinez and the injuries to Mrs. Solis. Okay. Where is the connection in those two? And I think that's where our confusion was.
Okay.
And we were not unconfused by the briefs.
Okay. Well, my fault. I believe that the causation that the court is inquiring about is the same nature of causation that was discussed in the Rose case.
Okay.
And in that case, the Supreme Court, I think, tried to explain, I don't know if it was for the last time, it probably wasn't for the first time, the manner in which credentialing can relate to the provision of medical care and combine with it to cause injury. And at the risk of sounding real simple-minded, I think what the Rose case said and what Mr. Bay says are basically the same thing.
Well, the issue I had with referring to the Rose case is that the Rose case, I think for the first time, was trying to ascertain whether a credentialing allegation in a petition falls under Chapter 74. Of which there was a dispute, and the Supreme Court says it is, so you need a report.
Right.
I'm not sure that they ever really talked about how then we jumped the loop of, okay, what does a report have to say to causally connect? So how does, assuming for the sake of argument, that the hospital was negligent in credentialing Dr. Martinez.
Dr. Rodriguez, sorry.
Too many doctors this morning.
Right.
Martinez was the earlier case, right? Dr. Rodriguez is. Yes. How did that lead to his negligence acts?
Okay. Judge, respectfully, I think the Rose case opinion does specifically detail the manner in which the Supreme Court analyzed the causation in a credentialing claim, and I quoted from that opinion at pages 19 and 20 of appellant's brief, and I tried to bold the key part of that quote as well to facilitate its quick reading by the court, and I think the recitation that the Supreme Court gives there is as close to analogous to our case as I could ask for. In our case, Dr. Wilkinson's opinion is that Dr. Rodriguez's negligence caused the lacerations to my client's bladder and colon and the severance of her left ureter. And that is an opinion on which Mr. Bays relies in saying, but for what he believes is negligent credentialing, Dr. Rodriguez wouldn't have been in that facility. And to put a mechanical or a specific point as to the credentialing, one of the things he focused on, as I think the court will recall, is the concept that this hospital, and probably most, I don't know if all, but this hospital in the practice of credentialing physicians establishes a minimum professional liability insurance coverage requirement. And Mr. Bayes points out, I think sort of common sense, in a common sense fashion, that the professional liability insurance coverage can be viewed by a credentialing committee as a proxy for the competence or a determination of the competence of a physician. After all, if you had a highly incompetent physician, you would expect to have lots of negligence claims resulting in either unaffordable costs of insurance or an absolute unavailability of professional liability insurance. In this case, the hospital chose to establish across all specialties a requirement of $100,000 in coverage. And as the Bayes report discusses, recent large-scale reviews of OB-GYN MedMal claims and settlements indicates that the average, just the average, claim settlement was far above $100,000. And I think the key question in this case
is, does the amount of insurance that a doctor gets correlate with the qualifications of the doctor?
Well, yes, it does, in the sense that if a doctor has a significant negative claim history, he or she might find either that the cost of the insurance would be prohibitive, it would never be economically viable to practice in that specialty, or even that they can't buy it at any cost if they're wealthy and the cost is no issue. So yes, I think that those are clearly intertwined, and that I think is the point Mr. Bayes makes. Now,
as far as credentialing, is the amount of insurance or the insurance requirement, is it part of the credentialing process? Because I just kind of digress for a moment. When
sure.
I think of credentialing, I'm thinking of he's gone to so-and-so medical school, he's printed so-and-so paper, he's done all these activities that say he's a good doctor to be here. But I don't think of the after the fact that, oh my gosh, he could not get insurance. I mean, okay. Is that
to answer your question, right. Judge, in this hospital's credentialing rules, and I suspect in most of, if not all of, the for-profit hospitals, there is an insurance component that is a part of the credentialing requirements.
So, Mr. Tumble, I guess I missed that part. I was really looking for evidence of this hospital's credentialing standards and what they went through. I didn't see any evidence at all in Bayes' report that said this is what this hospital uses for a basis of credentialing, and this is why they fail. It's just this stuff about insurance. I was wondering, do we have evidence of their specific credentialing policies? Did he review that?
Yes, he did, Judge. And
okay.
I haven't got his report memorized, but he even talks about the fact that the evidence he was reviewing showed not only that the hospital only required $100,000 coverage, but also that this particular physician actually had $200,000 in coverage,
right.
And then talked about how even the $200,000 falls short of just the average claim settlement amount for the OB-GYN specialty. But going to Justice Perk's question, which I think goes in a way right to the most important issue in this case, and it's the issue for which I cited the J&D towing case at page 20 of the brief, and it's this concept. The underlying policy behind compensation for tort victims is the make-whole doctrine. That's what the Supreme Court said in J&D Towing, and they did so in a paragraph that begins at the top of page, not at the top, it's on page 655. It begins with the phrase, "We begin with first principles," and it goes on to talk about this fundamental concept in our tort law in Texas, and that is tort compensation is not intended to benefit or give a windfall to the victim, nor to use the court's phrase, give them meager justice or meager compensation, but to give them fair compensation such that as best as can be done, they're put back where they would have been before. And where there are basically three players, the patient, the doctor, and the hospital, only the hospital is in the position to see that under the circumstances that are going on every hour of every day there, that negligence victims in its facility can get make-whole compensation.
Thank you, Mr. Tumble.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I am Ezekiel Moya, Jr. on behalf of the appellees, McAllen Hospitals, LP, and I submit to the court that the trial court acted within its discretion when it sustained defendant's objections to Mr. Bay's causation opinions, and would respectfully request that the trial court's ruling be sustained or affirmed. Now, the analysis for causation, I think Judge Benavides, you hit on this, is identified in a Corpus Christi, this court's opinion, in Myers versus Gold Palms Retirement and Health Center, where it adopts the Kramer two-factor test. And the first factor being, was the alleged negligence a substantial factor in the plaintiff's damages and injuries? Two, but for this negligence, would the damages or injuries been avoided? And Mr. Bay's report, just reading it on its face, does not comply with the standards set out in that case. For example, the court juxtaposed the Tovar expert report, which explains how the nexus and how it caused the damages and injuries, and juxtaposed that against two other reports that failed to meet that standard. And Mr. Bay's report falls on those two reports that did not meet the standard, in as outlined in Myers. Now, two points that I'd like to bring up with regards to the Rose case. Judge, I think you were right on point with regard to the Rose case, that there's two different analysis here. One, the inextricably linked to the medical services, that is a analysis pertaining to whether or not a claim is a healthcare liability claim. The issue we have before the court today is a causation, and that analysis is that two-factor test that we just discussed. So Rose is inapplicable in the court's analysis for causation purposes. Now, with regards to insurance, the credentialing process does focus, as Judge Perks pointed out, to the physician's education, training, whether there's been past lawsuits, whether there's been any patients that have died. That is what the committee, the credentialing committee, looks at. It is not the hospital. The credentialing committee is comprised of physicians.
Does the credentialing, I mean, there's things that have to be done when you get a job. You have the credentialing committee that's looking at credentials. Is this insurance policy requirement a part of that credentialing committee, or is that something that just if you pass the credentialing committee, then it's something the hospital requires after the fact?
Yes, Your Honor. The credentialing committee looks at experience, and if all of that is approved, then a part of the requirement to get privileges that the credentialing committee sets is you have to have insurance. Now, the rates of insurance, how much? I guess something that we can all relate to is car insurance. And Mr. Bay posits that depending on, for medical malpractice insurance, depending on the amounts of liability somehow colors or correlates to the physician's abilities, that does not make sense. And we'll, for example, compare it to car insurance. If I have $20,000 on car insurance, does that mean I'm not a competent driver? If you have $100,000 on your insurance and on your car, does that mean you're a competent driver? I don't think so. It doesn't correlate. Now, there's a lot of factors at play, and that's the point I'm trying to make here, Judge.
I agree with your analogy, but I think that the argument is being made, and I'm going to ask Mr. Tummel this question, was I think what he's saying is if you don't credential a doctor, you don't credential them, then they're not that day to do the surgery. They can't do the surgery. So as opposed to whether I have more insurance, I can still drive because I still have a driver's license. If these doctors aren't given privileges in hospitals, then they can't perform the surgery, which is what leads to this alleged unfortunate incident. The question that I have in following up with Justice Perks is, that may be true as to where they went to med school and what qualifications they have. The question I have is, how does insurance, and I know that that's what you were trying to ascertain with the car insurance, but how does insurance decide on whether this person was qualified and whether the hospital is credentialing correct people based on insurance? And I think the argument that Mr. Tumman was making is that it correlates. Somehow it correlates. As I said, I was confused, and I'm trying to work through my confusion.
Let me see if I can help clarify that confusion, Judge. So one, does insurance have some correlation to the level of competency? I don't think so. I think that if a physician has a long history of malpractice claims, obviously his premiums are going to be more expensive to get the same amount of insurance, just like it would for us in getting a vehicle. And that's the issue here, is a negligent credentialing, meaning was he experienced, did they have prior lawsuits such that indicate that the credentialing committee should not have given the privileges to do surgeries. They're not the insurance. And moreover, in Mr. Bay's opinion, even assuming that the theory of insurance is a valid one, that's not indicated in the causation opinion as far as whether or not sufficient insurance was a substantial factor in causing the injuries, and but for the insurance limits that this would not have happened. And that is not indicated in the opinion. So akin to Myers, reading the causation opinion, Judge, it doesn't sufficiently outline or represent a good faith effort as it pertains to the credentialing or negligent credentialing liability theory. And again, I respectfully request that the trial court's ruling be affirmed. And I don't know if there's any other question, Your Honors.
Any other questions from the panel? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
To go back to a point that was just discussed, and so that I can try to answer any additional questions that you have about it. When physicians apply for professional liability insurance, they make a fairly full-blown application, which does list things like where they went to med school, where they did their residency, but it also includes prior claims. Not just lawsuits, but claims, lawsuits, resolution of claims, and their entire prior insurance history. Because being in the business of insuring for a profit, no carrier wants to issue a policy that has a significant risk of being a money loser. And yes, I think it won't take the court long to find evidence in the case law that If a doctor, for whatever reason or reasons, has such a bad record, maybe they're actually good, but they're drunks, or maybe they're incompetent. But whatever the reason is, if they hurt enough people, eventually either their insurance will become prohibitively expensive, they'll pay more for their coverage than they'll ever earn as a physician, or they won't even be able to buy it.
And counsel, is there any evidence of any other acts or anything that's particular physician has done in the past? Or are we just talking about the insurance contract and the fact it just wasn't high enough?
Okay. To answer your question, there is evidence, Judge, of another patient that was injured by this physician. But I before I forget, I just want to say I think that what counsel for the hospital did is really say two things that are opposite. I think he tried to contrast or analogize, I'm not sure which, auto insurance to professional liability insurance, and suggest that we can all get automobile insurance regardless of how poor a driver we are. But then I think later he did admit that, no, actually, that's not true. If we're a bad enough driver, we're not going to get insurance, or it's going to be so expensive, it's cheaper to hire a limo for us. I think that's the reality.
The eventually committee would know that he could not get insurance. I mean, the fact is there's a bar that's been set, and he's been able to meet that bar.
That's true. In fact, she exceeded the bar. The point of Mr. Bay's analysis, though, is that, number one, if that bar, if that level of insurance, whatever it is grossly inadequate to meet even the average compensation arrived at in settled claims, it's too low, and therefore puts too little of a premium on the quality of the physician, which is correlated. You cannot be highly insured as a physician and have a significant claim history. It just won't happen. By the way, there was a suggestion that Dr. Bayes did not address causation, and in fact, that's exactly what he did address on page 48 in response to question number two that I posed to him.
Mr. Tumble, does the hospital have to prove, do you have to prove the hospital acted with malice, or what's the standard here?
No, this is just ordinary care, Judge. This is not an ER case. This was a planned surgery. It was a planned hysterectomy. And I think the court probably will recall, I certainly do, wasn't that far back in time when hysterectomies were the most frequently performed surgeries in America. And as one would expect if that were a fact, they were pretty darn safe. They had a very high success, low complication rate. This poor lady, she met the basomatic of surgeons. Multiple lacerations of her bladder, multiple lacerations of her colon, and a complete severance of her left ureter. Just horrible.
Okay, and supposing we thought malice was necessary under the standard, do you feel that Mr. Bay's opinion sufficiently addresses malice?
He does address it. I don't think it's enough because this was before I had a chance to conduct discovery, Judge, and I think I can load his gun with even a half a chance at getting some depositions.
I understand. I mean, I'm assuming also you didn't have a chance to look at any credentialing policies of the hospital or anything like that.
Yes, and to dovetail that with Judge Perk's question, and just so you're clear, the documents that Mr. Bay's reference is having reviewed includes one that is described as, quote, documents produced, I'm on page 43 of his report, documents produced by Edinburgh Regional Medical Center, which included delineated privileges granted to Dr. Rodriguez for a particular period of time. And what you'll see if you had that document in front of you, and I'll be happy to provide that if the court asks, is that the decision, the credentialing decision, is in a document which is conditioned upon the physician having the specified amount of professional liability insurance coverage to become effective. That's the way they do it. But that said, the reason it's in that form is because they have standards for credentialing of physicians, and it does provide a requirement that the doctor have $100,000, at least $100,000 of professional liability insurance. One thing I didn't get to touch on, and I'll just mention it, when you're talking about professional liability insurance, it's enormously important to distinguish whether you're talking about traditional policies or what are called eroding policies. Because eroding policies are ones where the limit is X, and there may be nothing to pay compensation because all of X is consumed in defense litigation costs. And those are becoming more and more popular. So another criticism that Bayes made of the credentialing standards that the hospital has adopted is it's silent when it speaks of professional liability insurance as to whether it's talking about eroding, non-eroding, or both. It doesn't make that mention. Also, I think it's important, just as a matter of arithmetic, to keep this in mind. When he cites those studies, and they were full-blown studies, many case histories, I forgot the exact number, but statistically clearly a valid result. Those numbers were averages. I think it was between 300 and 400, or 350 and 450, average claim settlements for OB-GYNs. That's the average, which means that half of all the settlements were north of that range of 3 to 4 or 350 to 400,000. And against that backdrop, this hospital chose to request $100,000 and didn't even say it can't be eroding. Okay. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you. Anything further? Okay, we're starting to